Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy to see if you could save when you bundle your home and auto policies. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This MLB season, FanDuel's Dinger Tuesday is back. And this year, all customers get a profit boost to bet home runs every week. So gear up to go yard all season long on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in select states. Opt-in required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable profit boost tokens. Restrictions apply, including any token expiration and max wager amount. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly. And the second trial of Karen Reed, who has been charged with second-degree murder, OUI manslaughter, and leaving the scene in the 2022 death of Boston police officer John O'Keefe, began yesterday on April 22nd with opening statements from both sides. Today, I want to summarize each side's key points from day one, including some of the more notable quotes, evidence that has been introduced, and which aspects are confirmed facts versus contested claims. And this is bonus extra content outside of my typical episode schedule, so it would mean a lot to me if you guys would share this episode so that my podcast can reach new listeners. Now, before we get started, I want to establish what we already know, which is that Karen Reed is on trial for the 2022 death of her boyfriend, Boston police officer John O'Keefe, who was found unresponsive in a snowbank outside of a friend's house in Canton, Massachusetts. Prosecutors say Karen, who was angry and drunk that night, backed into O'Keefe with her SUV and then left him to die in the freezing cold and then tried to cover it up by making misleading phone calls. The defense claims that she is being framed and that the police botched or even manipulated the investigation, ignoring the possibility that John O'Keefe was injured elsewhere and then dumped outside. So key evidence from the Commonwealth includes taillight fragments that matched Karen Reed's car, her alleged confession at the scene, and digital data from her phone and vehicle.
But the defense's key evidence is that John O'Keefe's injuries are not consistent with being hit by Karen Reed's SUV, or any SUV for that matter, and that investigators, especially Trooper Michael Proctor, allegedly mishandled or manipulated evidence to frame her. Now, this case has been highly polarizing with intense public interest, accusations of police corruption, and of course, a deeply divided community who's been watching every move in court, and they have had people lining the streets outside of the courthouse, cheering, chanting, wearing pink for Karen Reed. I mean, it has been wild to watch, honestly. It's like a spectacle. There's been circuses outside of the courthouse on a daily basis during the first trial. I don't know if we're going to get that same kind of attention this time around, but I would not be surprised. I also did do some deep dives on this case last year, so you can go back and find those episodes where I detail more about exactly what happened that night in the timeline. Although I will say, as I do these recaps, we're probably just going to rehash all of it again. So if you do want to go back and listen to it, by all means, but I will be kind of reiterating a lot of it as I do these recaps. So it's up to you. But without further ado, let's get into the prosecution's opening statement. Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan opened by setting the scene of the discovery of John O'Keefe in the early hours of January 29th, 2022. He described Canton firefighter paramedic Timothy Nuttall arriving in blizzard-like conditions to find John O'Keefe unresponsive in a snowbank. When Nuttall asked Karen what happened, he said that Karen allegedly replied, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him," three times, a statement the jurors will hear directly from Timothy Nuttall's testimony. He told the jury, quote, "We are here today because John O'Keefe was killed by the actions and conduct of that defendant, Karen Reed," end quote. Now, Hank Brennan outlined forensic evidence that the Commonwealth says will prove Karen Reed's guilt. He noted that data from her cell phone and vehicle will be pivotal. This includes newly highlighted information about the temperature of John O'Keefe's phone battery, which is a detail that was not examined in the first trial. And this could help establish a timeline of when O'Keefe became unresponsive in the cold. Likewise, the Lexus SUV that Karen was driving had a black box in it. And apparently this black box recorder shows unusual activity. Brennan said that the data indicates Karen Reed put her vehicle into neutral, then reverse, and pressed the gas to 75% throttle while on the lawn. According to the prosecution, this supports the theory that she had backed into John O'Keefe, saying, quote, "She clipped John O'Keefe, he fell backwards, hit his head, broke his skull," end quote. Now, the prosecution also used Karen Reed's prior statements to bolster their case. Hank Brennan pointed to a series of angry voicemails that Karen left John O'Keefe between 12:45 and 1 a.m. after she allegedly struck him. In one message that was left at 12:59 a.m., Karen Reed can be heard saying, "John, nobody knows where you are," which Brennan argued was deceptive. He said, "This is where the plot and the cover-up begins," suggesting that Karen Reed was already crafting an alibi. Now, prosecutors contend that instead of calling 911, Karen Reed feigned ignorance by calling friends and John O'Keefe repeatedly, all while knowing he lay injured outside. And to underscore this, Hank Brennan played a clip from an October 2024 Dateline interview in which Karen Reed herself pondered the night's events. In the clip, she wonders out loud, saying, quote, "I didn't think I hit him, but could I have clipped him? Could I have done something that knocked him out and in the cold he didn't come to again?" End quote. Now, the prosecution argued that this TV interview was essentially Karen Reed acknowledging the possibility that she hit O'Keefe, and coupled with her failure to get help, it suggests consciousness of guilt. In summary, the state's opening portrayed the incident as a tragic, drunken mistake compounded by a deliberate cover-up. They are alleging that Karen Reed had been drinking the night that she struck John O'Keefe with her SUV outside of a house party and then panicked. Rather than render aid, she left him to die of his injuries and exposure to the cold while trying to cover her tracks with phone calls and then later misleading investigators. The prosecutor promised the jury that by the end of the trial, the electronic data, eyewitness accounts, and forensic findings will all align to prove Karen Reed is responsible for John O'Keefe's death beyond a reasonable doubt. All right, now with that out of the way, let's get into the defense's opening statements. I do want to note that a few things are different this time around. In the last trial, we had a different prosecutor for the Commonwealth that was representing during the opening statements, and that was Adam Lally. A lot of you might remember him if you watched the first trial, that he was just really ineffective. He spoke in monotone. He was very boring and not compelling. So this time around, they have special prosecutor Hank Brennan delivering the opening statement, and so we'll see if that, you know, makes any difference for them. Also this time around for the defense, Alan Jackson is delivering the opening statement instead of David Yannetti. And you might remember during the first trial, he opened with the line, "Karen Reed was framed." And this time they're going about it a little bit differently, but pretty similar. Regardless, I do believe that the opening statement is such a crucial part of the trial. It's your first impression. It's where you might develop your opinion right off the bat and then allow things to change as they present evidence. But I just think it is such a crucial, pivotal moment of the trial. So I do think it was calculated that they had a different special prosecutor deliver the opening statement instead of Adam Lally. But that's maybe just my theory. I don't know. You can tell me what you think. But defense attorney Alan Jackson delivered a starkly different narrative, flatly denying that Karen Reed's vehicle ever struck John O'Keefe. He told the jurors, quote, "There was no collision with John O'Keefe," saying that he did not die from being hit by a vehicle, period, end quote. According to the defense, all the science and data will back them up. He said, quote, "The facts will show that, the evidence will show that, the data will show that, the science will show that, and the experts will tell you that." And this is a foundational claim of Karen Reed's defense, that John O'Keefe's injuries are not consistent with being struck by her SUV, meaning something or someone else had to have caused his death. Alan Jackson also implied that once the jurors see the medical evidence and the accident reconstruction analysis, they will conclude the prosecution's hit-and-run theory is just impossible. The defense's opening statement also aggressively attacked the integrity of the police investigation, rather than proposing an elaborate alternate scenario. Jackson argued that from the very start, investigators jumped to the wrong conclusion and ignored signs pointing elsewhere. He stated that the investigation was corrupted by bias, corrupted by incompetence, and corrupted by deceit. In particular, Alan Jackson zeroed in on former Massachusetts State Police Trooper Michael Proctor, who was the lead investigator on this case, calling him a cancer on the case. According to Jackson, Proctor never properly examined the inside of the house at 34 Fairview Road, which was, of course, the site of the party, or canvassed other potential witnesses because he was so fixated on implicating Karen Reed from the get-go. Alan Jackson went so far as to accuse Trooper Proctor of fabricating evidence to frame Karen Reed, saying, quote, "You'll see during the trial that he intentionally lied and fabricated evidence during the course of this investigation," end quote. He claimed that Michael Proctor lied in official reports, affidavits, and even under oath about critical details. One striking example that the defense highlighted was the handling of Karen Reed's Lexus SUV and its broken taillight. He told the jurors that Proctor misled others about when he took possession of Karen Reed's vehicle, saying, quote, "He lied about the time that he actually secured Karen Reed's vehicle, and he lied because he did not want it revealed that he had access to that vehicle and that he had access to that taillight before any taillight fragments were found at 34 Fairview," end quote. And that is huge. This suggests that the defense will contend that the broken taillight pieces found near John O'Keefe's body, a key piece of physical evidence tying Karen Reed's SUV to the scene, may have been planted or manipulated by the investigator. Jackson painted Proctor as a dishonest officer who intentionally lied to cover up mistakes or misconduct, thereby tainting all the evidence against Karen Reed. And I think that is really important. And he also detailed how in the video of the Ring footage of the driveway at John O'Keefe's house, you can actually see Karen Reed back out of her garage and bump into John O'Keefe's car, which was parked outside in the driveway. And you can see it bump into it exactly where the taillight was cracked. I mean, it makes perfect sense, really, that she backed into this car creating the broken taillight. But it makes perfect sense that the taillight didn't shatter right upon impact in the driveway. Rather, it was cracked. Karen pointed it out later after she found John O'Keefe's body. And Michael Proctor had a lot of reasons to take advantage of this by taking the car, not saying exactly when he took it. And then we'll talk about evidence and the Sally port and how the video footage of that was all manipulated annihilated in reverse. It's like a whole thing, but it just makes perfect sense that Michael Proctor would go in, take pieces of the taillight after knowing that it was already cracked by other means, and then dispersing it on the lawn. And nobody found a single piece of taillight until after Michael Proctor had Karen Reed's car in his possession. So it's just kind of like common sense at this point. Now, I realize that's kind of my biased opinion. So if you are out there and you believe that Karen Reed is definitely guilty, don't come for me for being super biased. I really am going to try to. I'm going to try to relay everything from both sides as factually as I can. And sometimes my own opinion might interject, but you can just totally ignore it if you want. But throughout his statement, Alan Jackson aimed to sow reasonable doubt about every pillar of the prosecution's case. Where the state sees proof of guilt, the defense sees incompetence or even malfeasance. For instance, if the prosecutors cite forensic data, Jackson suggests jurors should question who handled that evidence and whether it can even be trusted. The defense argued that many conclusions drawn by the state, such as the interpretation of vehicle data or the assumption that Karen Reed's voicemails indicate guilt, are all speculative or misleading. He reminded the jury that the burden of proof lies with the prosecution and cautioned them not to accept the Commonwealth's narrative at face value, hinting that the defense will present expert testimony to contradict the state's experts on issues like injury causation and data analysis. So I think what they're kind of getting at there, just gleaning from the first trial, is that there was a lot of back and forth on the Google search that was made by Jen McCabe, whether it was at 2:30 in the morning or at 6:30 in the morning. She Googled Haas long to die in cold. Obviously she meant to type how long to die in cold, but the Commonwealth is suggesting that that search was made actually at 6 a.m. upon finding John O'Keefe because Karen asked her to, whereas the defense points out that this search was actually made at 2 something in the morning, before John O'Keefe was ever found by Karen or anyone else. And that would suggest that she knew John O'Keefe was out in the yard at the time. And then to go even further, she deleted that Google search. Why would you need to delete it if you're completely innocent? So that is just one example of how the defense is probably going to fight back against some of the expert testimony or the forensic findings that the Commonwealth is going to present.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. It's the ultimate bundle for an unbelievable price. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. Get it and watch Marvel Television's Ironheart on Disney Plus.
I want to build something iconic.
A new season of The Bear on Hulu.
We can make people happy.
And The Epic, a Minecraft movie on Max.
Anything you can imagine is possible.
The Disney Plus Hulu Max bundle. Plans starting at $16.99 a month. All these and more now streaming. Terms apply. Visit DisneyPlusHuluMaxBundle.com for details.
Notably, unlike the first trial, Alan Jackson did not focus on accusing specific alternative culprits, such as people who were inside the house, during his opening. In pretrial hearings, the defense had floated this theory that John O'Keefe was beaten inside the house, possibly even mauled by the homeowner's dog, and that his body was later moved outside. However, the judge has set limits on raising such third-party culpability without solid evidence. And Alan Jackson steered clear of extensively outlining that theory in his opening. Instead, the defense strategy on day one was to attack the prosecution's evidence and procedures rather than to explicitly argue who might be responsible. So his parting words to the jury were a direct appeal. He asked them to find Karen Reed not guilty on all charges, emphatically repeating not guilty, not guilty, not guilty for each of the three counts against her. This triple repetition underscored the defense's confidence that once all evidence is heard, the only logical verdict will be an acquittal. I also think it's interesting that he said it in threes because the Commonwealth's theory is that she said three times distinctly, I hit him, I hit him, I hit him. But he's kind of using that same cadence to say, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. Okay, now given the stark contrast between the two opening statements, it's important to distinguish established facts from the attorney's theories or speculative claims. So in this section, I want to go ahead and kind of differentiate those things. There are certain underlying facts of this case that are not in dispute. John O'Keefe's body was indeed found in the snow in front of 34 Fairview Road in Canton in the early morning of January 29th, 2022, after a night of heavy snowfall. He sustained a severe head injury, including a skull fracture and swelling above his eye, and was also showing signs of hypothermia when he was found. Fragments of a broken taillight matching Karen Reed's Lexus SUV were recovered at the scene near O'Keefe's body, which is a crucial piece of evidence, physical evidence, that led police to focus on Karen Reed. Additionally, multiple first responders are prepared to testify, as one did on day one, which we'll get to, that Karen Reed repeatedly said, "I hit him," at the scene while John O'Keefe was being tended to. These elements, the location and condition of his body, the injuries, the car debris, and Karen Reed's spontaneous, you know, admissions of guilt or whatever, are established pieces of the puzzle. But how they are interpreted, however, is sharply contested. The prosecution asserts that those facts point to a clear conclusion that Karen Reed struck John O'Keefe with her vehicle and knowingly left him to die. They argue that it was not a mere accident followed by confusion, but effectively a hit and run. Hank Brennan's opening statement claimed that Karen Reed was intoxicated and angry when she hit John O'Keefe and then engaged in this cover-up, calling friends and John O'Keefe's phone to create the impression that she didn't know what happened. For example, prosecutors believe the voicemail where Karen Reed says, "Nobody knows where you are," was a part of a ruse, since they alleged that she actually did know his whereabouts at the time, which was injured in the snow. They also introduced new analytical evidence like phone battery temperature readings and car telemetry data that they claim will back up this narrative. But it's important to note that these are prosecution allegations. While grounded in evidence, they are still interpretations that must be proven through witness testimony and forensic analysis. For instance, the idea that Karen Reed intentionally left John O'Keefe is an inference from circumstantial evidence, such as the lack of a 911 call and those phone records. Likewise, the assertion that revving her car in reverse was an attempt to dislodge after hitting John O'Keefe is a theory consistent with the data, but it's not a directly observed fact. The jury will have to decide if the prosecution's evidence convincingly supports these claims of a deliberate act and cover-up. Now, the defense's claims, which remain to be proven, on the other hand, puts forward a very different set of explanations, many of which are speculative at this stage and will require evidence to substantiate these claims. But central to the defense is the claim that John O'Keefe's fatal injuries did not come from a collision with Karen Reed's SUV at all. This implies some alternate cause of death. So during pretrial and the first trial, defense attorneys suggested an alternative theory that John O'Keefe might have been assaulted inside the house by other individuals and possibly even suffered a dog attack because the homeowner's German Shepherd was known to be aggressive with strangers. And I do find it interesting that, of course, they rehomed the dog shortly after this happened. This family pet that they had for at least 5 years, maybe six, they rehomed it after this incident, which is, I think, interesting. Also, they sold their home, which I do find to be interesting because apparently this house was in the family for a really long time and they changed the carpet, I think, in the basement and then sold the home. And so it's just weird that these big life moments where you rehome a dog and you move your home or you sell your home happened very shortly after John O'Keefe's death, but also that neither of these things, the dog or the house, were ever investigated during the investigation. There was no search done on the house. There was no forensic evidence collected from the house. Literally nothing. They never stepped foot into the house other than to just interview the McCabes and the Alberts. So I think that fact is also interesting because it suggests that they had tunnel vision from the start. However, to be devil's advocate and trying not to be too biased, although I know I am, but no direct evidence of an inside fight or dog bites, such as DNA or forensic proof, has yet to be presented. In fact, prosecutors note that no DNA, dog DNA, was found on John O'Keefe's body or clothing. In this retrial's opening, Alan Jackson focused less on naming other culprits and more on alleging a police conspiracy to frame Karen Reed. The defense claims that investigators like Trooper Proctor were so convinced or determined that Karen Reed was guilty that they falsified reports and mishandled evidence to fit that narrative. The suggestion that police planted the taillight fragments or lied about investigative steps is a serious accusation. It remains a theory that the defense will attempt to support through cross-examination and their own experts. At this point, those allegations are unproven. The defense will need to produce credible evidence or inconsistencies to make jurors doubt the integrity of the investigation. Essentially, the defense is asking the jury to consider that everything is not what it seems. Maybe the forensic evidence was tampered with, or maybe John O'Keefe's injuries occurred in a way that the initial investigation never explored. These alternate explanations are not confirmed facts. They are hypotheses that raise questions about the prosecution's case. The success of the defense will hinge on whether they can turn those hypotheses into reasonable doubt by the end of the trial. I kind of liken this strategy to Casey Anthony's defense strategy, which was just to place as much doubt as possible into the jury's minds so that they could find Casey Anthony not guilty. And that is exactly what happened. So I do believe these cases are totally different. I'm not likening Karen Reed to Casey Anthony as a person. I just think these defense strategies are somewhat similar. Now, going forward, here is what I think we can expect to be different about this second Karen Reed trial compared to the first one. The first is that there is a new special prosecutor for the Commonwealth, and it's now being led by Special Prosecutor Hank Brennan, who is a high-profile attorney known for securing tough convictions. His appointment marks a shift from the original DA's office, which faced public criticism and pressure for how the first case was handled. So I kind of touched on that in the beginning, but the first one was handled by Adam Lally, and he was, he was boring, he was repetitive, he was monotone, he just seemed very ineffective when it came to actually impacting the jury. Now, the second thing is the refined strategy from the defense. So in the first trial, the defense leaned heavily into the theory that John O'Keefe was beaten inside the house and then possibly attacked by a dog in the midst of that scuffle. This time, they've narrowed their focus, emphasizing corruption and evidence tampering by investigators, especially Trooper Michael Proctor. So I think the whole case for the defense is going to hinge on Trooper Michael Proctor. And the reason for this is because the judge has imposed more rigid rules about introducing alternative theories or blaming others without concrete evidence. So don't expect the same level of finger pointing at partygoers unless the defense can back it up with real facts. The prosecution is now also introducing additional technical evidence, including data from Karen Reed's Lexus black box, her cell phone metadata, and even the temperature of John O'Keefe's phone battery to refine their timeline and argue that John O'Keefe died after being hit, not inside the house. And since the first trial, this case has become a national spectacle. There has been advocacy on social media, there's been protests, even true crime coverage has made this not just a legal battle, but like kind of a PR war. And jurors in this case are entering with far more public scrutiny and background noise than ever before. So in short, there's new leadership, there's new forensic detail, or more, maybe. There's been a sharpened defense strategy, stricter courtroom rules, which the judge is Beverly Cannone, and a lot of people believe that she is super biased when it comes to this case and that she should be recused from it because she seems to favor the Commonwealth. And that does seem kind of obvious throughout the first trial, but we'll see how the second one goes. She did impose stricter courtroom rules. And then, of course, this trial is now happening under much bigger spotlight. One thing I want to add to is that there is a multi-part documentary series on this case where Karen Reed actually does a lot of interviews. You can find it on ID or HBO. I think it's a 3 or 4 part series where you actually hear from Karen Reed herself, which is something that we did not hear from during the first trial. She never testified. I don't believe she will testify this time around either. But I guess we'll just have to see. But I do encourage you to go watch that if you're interested in this trial, because I do think it just kind of lays everything out beautifully. And you hear from Karen Reed herself, and it just kind of humanizes her a little bit, too. A lot of times during the first trial, she would get flack for her affect being kind of hard and brash. But you probably would be, too, if you were being accused of hitting your boyfriend with your car when you know for sure that you didn't. So, she's faced a lot of scrutiny herself and a lot of hate from that community and that family, the McCabes and the Alberts. So, yeah, I would probably have a chip on my shoulder also. But a lot of people equate that to her guilt rather than just her human response. But anyway, to wrap this up, we did hear from one witness yesterday. It was Canton firefighter paramedic Timothy Nuttall, who testified that upon arriving at the scene where John O'Keefe was found, he heard Karen Reed repeatedly exclaim, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him." This statement is central to the prosecution's argument that Reed struck O'Keefe with her SUV and left him to die in the snow. The defense contends that Karen's remarks were expressions of distress rather than admissions of guilt, asserting that his injuries are not consistent with being hit by a vehicle. But his testimony is expected to be pivotal as the trial progresses. However, he was cross-examined yesterday also, and Alan Jackson challenged his recollection of that alleged statement, pointing out that during the first trial, he testified that Karen said, "I hit him only twice," whereas in the current trial, he's stating that he heard it three times. Now, Timothy Nuttall acknowledged this discrepancy, but maintained that his current memory was accurate. And Alan Jackson also questioned him about the nature of John O'Keefe's injuries, suggesting that they could be consistent with being punched in the face. But Timothy Nuttall responded that the injuries could have been sustained in multiple ways, including a punch, but he couldn't definitively determine the cause. But that's also not his job. On cross-examination, Alan Jackson was quick to call his memory into question, noting that during the first trial last year, not only did he recall differently the number of times Karen Reed said, "I hit him," but he also confronted Timothy Nuttall with his own testimony about what John O'Keefe was wearing, which turned out to be wrong when he testified about it last year. Then he replayed dashcam video of paramedics on the scene asking him to walk through it and pointing out where his testimony did not line up with what was on the screen. Now, Timothy appeared uncomfortable at times as Jackson questioned his memory, but of course, this was just a strategy by the defense to dismantle the credibility of this witness. Then we heard from Kerry Roberts, who was with Jen McCabe and Karen Reed that morning when they were searching for John O'Keefe, driving around, and then they finally came upon 34 Fairview, and Karen said, there he is, get me out of this fucking car, and she's like kicking the door. This is according to Carrie's testimony, but of course, Carrie is saying, and Jen McCabe essentially, that they didn't see John anywhere. So the implication there is that Karen didn't actually see John because nobody could see him, but that she knew he was there because she hit him. So it's all kind of implied. But we'll see how that breaks down today as the jurors return and the trial resumes today for day two. I don't think there was time to cross-examine her yesterday, so that'll likely happen today. And I will keep you up to date on all of it, hopefully tomorrow with day two recap. If you liked this, let me know in the comments of the Spotify episode. You can also leave comments on my Instagram, and I should be able to see those there. If there's anything I'm missing or anything you want me to touch on, let me know. I'm here for you guys to break this all down so you don't have to sit in front of Court TV live streaming this trial 8 hours a day. You're welcome. As a thank you, though, I would love, appreciate so much if you would share this episode on your social media or with a friend. Send it to someone who doesn't know much about this case but might seem interested in it. If you think they might find it interesting, whatever, share it so we reach new listeners. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for listening to today's episode, and I'll catch you tomorrow. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.